That is one of the most, I don't know, adorable musicians in my mind. That was the great Shirley Scott with It Don't Mean a Thing. By the way, Shirley Scott at one time was married to Stanley Turrentine. But here's what's really fascinating, too, is that she was the organist at Abyssinia Baptist Church in Harlem. And so was Fats Waller. So the jazz world was universal as well in and useful in the church, as outside of the church. So I just love Shirley Scott. I urge you to buy her music and listen to it and to get to know her. Oh, what a wonderful, wonderful musician she is, and a pioneer too in the world of jazz, a pioneer among a male-dominated field. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and I'm picking up from where we left off in this discussion about the big, almost universal now, land grab. It is happening all across the country. We started off with Harlem, and there's an update there. But, it isn't confined to Harlem, what is going on. And I thought I would call up one of our very frequent contributors, Abayomi Ezekwe from Detroit, who has been an activist for a very long time there, especially working in the area of housing and the banks. And I said, what's going on in Detroit? And he's here to tell us what's going on in Detroit today. Abayomi, thanks for being with us.
Oh, thank you so much for having me once again.
Thank you. So, what is going on in Detroit with regard to housing?
Things are happening on many different levels. Before we have talked about the Detroit Land Bank Authority, that was set up by the state legislature several years ago. And after the imposition of emergency management and bankruptcy in 2013 and 2014, they got an infusion of federal money, money that should have gone to assist people with their mortgages. And today, with delinquent property tax bills, but the money was redirected, hundreds of millions of dollars, for the purpose of acquiring homes, so-called blighted homes, by the Detroit Land Bank Authority, and to tear those homes down if they felt they were not able to be rehabilitated. And this has resulted in a huge scandal here in the city. They hired PricewaterhouseCoopers back in the summer to monitor the awarding of demolition contracts because there were so many irregularities. The mayor, whose name is on all of these lawsuits that are filed against property owners, where they say the homes and properties are blighted, has not been indicted at all for this type of malfeasance. Neither has anyone at the land bank. A lot of people have come and gone over the last 2 years, directors, executive directors, staff attorneys, and so forth. They claim there's still an ongoing federal grand jury that's looking into this, but they're still allowed to do business. This is a major problem. Now, from what I understand, they are the largest property owners in the city of Detroit. They've acquired tens of thousands of homes as well as vacant land where the homes have been demolished. So that's one major factor in the housing crisis here in the city, that we had the redirection of hundreds of millions of dollars in federal funds that could have gone a long ways in a city like Detroit to stabilize communities and provide incentives for people to stay there or either move into those communities, and that has not happened. Now, what's interesting about the Detroit Land Bank Authority, it works closely with the Detroit Blight Removal Task Force, which I believe is still headed by Dan Gilbert. It was headed by him. It follows his economic directives and objectives in identifying blighted homes and properties for seizure and possible demolition. To me, that appears to be a clear conflict of interest because he is the wealthiest person and has the most profitable businesses in this area. He owns Quicken Loans, which is a mortgage facilitation firm. He has just sold the Greektown Casino for $1 billion. He has been awarded just earlier this year approximately $1 billion to build. This is state money through tax credits and other forms of assistance to build a skyscraper at the old Hudson's Department Store site on Woodward Avenue downtown. So it's clearly a conflict of interest in my mind and as well as a lot of other people that these things are going on in the city of Detroit. Now, that's just one aspect. So you could ask me about others as well.
Oh, yes, I will. But what is significant is, at least I sense it, is a kind of spurt. There is a kind of a burst of energy with regard to supposedly building new housing, affordable housing. But it's interesting that the areas where this will supposedly occur are areas that were basically emptied, targeted. People were forced out by all kinds of elements, including the banks redlining, the state and the city with their rezoning, and with people not being able to hold on to their homes because of escalating costs. And you have also that the sense within the industry that it would only be a matter of time if the city and state authorities and even the feds, if they were able to just complete the targeting programs that each of them was undertaking, it meant that the cities or whichever areas they targeted would be emptied and they can start from scratch. What is your sense about this spurt of building or desiring to build, and how does that relate to the systematic emptying of particular areas?
Yeah, they targeted three areas in the city for initial, quote, development, unquote. That's the downtown area and also the Midtown area, which is north of downtown. Midtown is around the Wayne State University, the Detroit Institute of Arts, the Detroit Medical Center. It's the cultural hub of the city, and also Corktown, which was formerly the home of the Detroit Tigers and Detroit Lions. They had a huge stadium, used to be called Briggs Stadium and later Tiger Stadium, right on Trumbull and Michigan Avenue. That stadium has been torn down. The Tigers and the Lions now play right in the heart of downtown at Ford Field for the Lions and Comerica Park for the Tigers. And the Detroit Pistons are now playing at the newly constructed Little Caesars Arena, which was also heavily subsidized by taxpayer dollars as well. So the land essentially has been given to these billionaire developers. Olympia Entertainment, which is owned by Illich Holdings. A lot of the buildings downtown have been given to Rock Financial and associated firms. And over in Corktown, there are other groupings that are propping up. Right now at the site where Tiger Stadium used to be, they're building condominiums. A lot of them are being built there. There's also a affordable housing or low-income housing complex about two blocks from there, and there are efforts on the part of some wealthy interests to purchase those. in all likelihood, the people who are there will be forced out, and they will raise the rents, or if they're condos, they will have very high mortgage rates and terms that the people who live there now will not be able to return. And this is happening in these three areas in particular, but it's also spreading to other areas of the city. There was an attempt, at least discussion, about setting up a fund that would be partially federally subsidized, as well as private investment, where low-income housing can be constructed in Detroit. That remains to be seen if that's actually going to happen, because downtown is rapidly being cleared out low-income people, working-class people, senior citizens, people with disabilities. A lot of them have to move to the suburbs because there's really no place in the city that is generally affordable. So we have a question of what is affordable housing? You know, that's a major question.
It's a major question, but we have seen, because we've been talking about this for a couple of years now, the incredible transition that people were forced to make, because you could only use the word conspiracy of effort by the banks, by financial institutions, by the real estate world, to drive people out. At one point, I remembered you saying this, and it stuck in my head, when Detroit was predominantly black, working class, middle class city, black home ownership was at about 80%. 80%. So we can see that this was not a thing that happened, you know, by chance. This was a targeted plan. The second thing is, we have an administration, the president is from the real estate world. His whole family is in real estate. So there's a natural affinity with others in the real estate world. Do you suspect any connection between the two, the fact that Donald Trump is in the real estate business, a lot of people in his administration are in the real estate business, and therefore there would be a greater sympathy toward private development and basically getting on with the program of, quote, reimagining a city, as has been done in Detroit?
There is a direct connection. However, you have to determine what private investment is as well, because a lot of the so-called private investment is subsidized through public assets, for example, tax breaks, tax subsidies, the tax captures at the new complex that is being built by Dan Gilbert downtown, the tax revenue, and this was passed by the state legislature in Lansing. All the tax revenue that's generated in terms of sales tax and personal income tax stays within that consortium. It is not going to be shared with people throughout the city of Detroit. Now, that's even a higher degree of super exploitation, where the rationale is we have to provide incentives for the billionaires to work on their projects because it brings jobs and it brings tax revenue to the city. But that's not always the case. In many cases, the jobs that people have access to are already taken by people from outside the city, or they're not stable jobs. They're like revolving door jobs. You may go there and work for a few months, and you're thrown out because if you can't really make the firm profitable to the degree that they wish, they'll throw you out very rapidly. So, yes, I think there is an affinity between the Trump administration and Dan Gilbert. In fact, when Trump was running for president in 2016, he did host a fundraiser at one of his properties for the Trump campaign. Now, he claimed that that didn't mean he supported Trump, that, you know, he just provided that service. But clearly, with all the controversy that was surrounding Donald Trump, even in 2016 when he was running, any action of that nature is questionable. And, yeah, this is being engineered from the top down. And now even the programs where the money has been rediverted, most of it has been rediverted, for example, the Hardest Hit Fund, that is expiring in 2020. And we met with the Michigan State Housing Development Authority twice earlier this year, once in Lansing doing a demonstration surrounding the Poor People's Campaign. And then again here in Detroit, they told us, quote, there would be no new projects as of the summer, unquote. So even that now has been slashed out of the recent budgets that have been passed under the majority Republican House of Representatives and Senate, and, of course, engineered by the Trump administration. So even a lot of the programs that had existed are being eliminated through these tax breaks and tax cuts, budget reduction efforts that really benefit the rich. But what's underlying a lot of this as well, the fact that the corporate taxes were slashed 14% during the first few months of Trump's administration, a huge federal budget deficit is looming right now in the United States and is not even being discussed by the corporate media. So people are going to be hit with huge shortfalls in the not-too-distant future. And then, of course, with the economic downturn that's coming now, it's going to even be worse. Yeah, I believe that they don't have foresight, the wealthy in this country, and they're creating a lot of damage that could very well be irreversible.
But, you know, I don't think they care.
No, they don't.
Because even if they're not able to build right away, the most important thing is that they have the land.
Right.
They have the land. After they've raised all these blocks and blocks of homes that could have been saved if the banks were compelled, or there's somebody watching the operations of the banks to make it very difficult for people to hold on to their homes, there was such an incredible impact. Could you, in a few sentences, could you give us an idea of the enormity of the impact in Detroit for black homeowners who just have walked away or were forced to walk away, and therefore revealing, in fact, there was a conspiracy to target these communities?
Yes, and even today in 2018, Detroit is still overwhelmingly black, majority, working class, poor city. 83% of the population, even now, is African American. Now, watching the local news, you would never know that because the announcers are mainly white. Blacks are always in the minority. And what they focus on principally outside of crime are the downtown developments that are taking place downtown in Corktown and to a lesser degree in Midtown. Detroit was the leader in regard to home ownership, single family home ownership for both whites and later for the majority African American population. And it was targeted beginning in the mid 2000s through predatory lending. There was efforts by these financial institutions to sell as many mortgages as they could, whether it was refinancing, whether it was first-time home buyers. They were mortgages that were considered subprime, meaning that the interest rates were extremely high, and they had adjustable rate mortgages, which would reset every 6 months, every year, every 18 months. You may start out with a mortgage of perhaps $400 or $500 a month. Within 2 years, it could be as high as $1,400 or $2,200 a month. The banks would not work with people and actually sent their cases to the courts, and the bailiffs came out and evicted you from your home. It didn't matter if you had been there for 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, 40 years. They were targeting people specifically, even people who had homes that were paid for completely, who had inherited homes from their parents and grandparents. They were encouraging them to take out loans, sometimes as little as $20,000, $30,000, perhaps to repair your roof or to do other types of maintenance work on your home. And the mortgages had balloon payments. They were interest-only mortgage payments where the principals never went down. So these are the type of schemes that were concocted by the leading financial institutions in the United States. We're talking about Chase Bank, Bank of America, Countrywide Mortgages, which was subsumed by other larger banks. This was widespread during the early to mid-2000s. Actually, it began in the late 1990s under the Clinton administration, a huge deregulation of the financial sector of the economy. So this is what happened. It resulted in massive home foreclosures, abandonments of properties, and this actually created the reason behind the development of a Detroit Land Bank Authority to try to regulate all this vacant housing and vacant land. But when you have the same same predatory interests that are running the land bank, which also created the housing crisis, there will be no solution forthcoming that will benefit the people. There was an article just last month in the Detroit Metro Times. It's a weekly news paper which has written a number of highly critical articles on the city administration, on the Gilbert Empire. And they pointed out through a study that they had conducted over a period of months that the blight has actually worsened as a result of the Detroit Land Bank Authority policy. They have not improved, even in terms of tearing down homes and improving blight. It's all a myth. And if people want to look up that article, they can, and look at the actual figures that they came up with. It is astonishing that this has been facilitated largely through federal grant funds that should have gone to assist people in stabilizing the neighborhoods. Instead, it was redirected, and it has made the situation far worse than it was 10 or even 20 years ago.
Well, that brings us to the supposed involvement, the active involvement of the Trump administration via Housing Secretary Ben Carson.
Yeah.
He doesn't seem to be familiar with communities and cities like Detroit and New York City and other places where there is a crisis with regard to the affordable housing. What has Carson's presence been in the last several months in Detroit while it goes through this crisis?
I'm not aware of any direct visits to the city by him recently. He has been in the city since his appointment in 2017. He admitted he had no real hands-on experience in regard to governmental sponsored housing, and really doesn't appear to have any in-depth interest either. He has an ideological viewpoint which converges with the Trump administration, in essence that poor people are in their particular socioeconomic conditions due to bad decisions, they're having the wrong values, whatever. It has nothing to do with the system, has nothing to do with those who control the means of production in society, who control the financial institutions. So he's really not assisting at all, even though he comes from the Detroit area. He grew up in a poor working class community, but at this point he feels very strongly that he has no real connection to those communities at this point. So he's not going to be of any assistance to the majority black populated city of Detroit. And many of the policies that he's overseeing are actually making it more difficult for people to get assistance from the federal government as it relates to housing subsidies and other forms of assistance. The whole issue of low-income housing in Detroit, and it's, I'm sure it's like this in other cities as well, it's not even mentioned, the term low-income. The term affordable is mentioned, but here in Detroit, it's been defined not based upon the economic situation in the city. They also include large swaths of territory in the suburbs, many of which have much higher incomes and are much more well-off than people in the city of Detroit. So I think what's considered affordable in the city now would be a family that has approximately $60,000 in annual income would qualify for affordable housing. So that's clearly way far and above the median income of people in the city of Detroit, considering that Detroit has about 40% at least of its population living in poverty. The majority of the children that live in the city are under the federally designated poverty line. This has absolutely nothing to do with reality. It just falls in line with the same process of forcing people out of the city and they have to move to the suburbs. In downtown, there is the Park Avenue House Apartments. It's one of the few housing complexes in the downtown area where people can live at a fairly reasonable rate. They were told a few months ago, all the residents there, that there were new owners taking over the building. They had 30 days to get out. And it was such a bad situation that even the mayor himself supposedly intervened, and got the United Community Housing Coalition, which is a nonprofit agency that deals with housing problems in the city. Supposedly, they were given $400,000 to relocate all the residences. Now, some of the information we've been hearing is that this money is really not being utilized to relocate the residents. A lot of them are being told to move on their own, that they're not eligible for assistance. So these are the things that are going on. There was another one, which is now known as the Albert, which was on Griswold. This happened several years ago. There was a lot of senior citizens that lived there, people on fixed incomes, Social Security. They were told that it was being bought out, and they had to move. Now it's called the Albert, and you have to have a pretty strong weekly, biweekly, monthly income to live there. Now, I think the apartments are somewhere around $2,000 or more per month, which is a lot of money for Detroit. So, yes, this is the fruits of not only just the Trump administration, but going back even into the Obama administration, these things were taking place. So I think it's a widespread. Both parties are involved in this crisis. We don't hear any real debate going on among the Democrats or the Republicans involving housing and how to preserve housing for low-income people in urban areas.
Low-income people? Who wants to be concerned with low-income people? That's a lot of work. I want to ask, given what you have observed over the years in your activism in Detroit, you were part of the moratorium now to stop the actions against homeowners because they were losing their properties. We've discussed that this is not accidental. All these things are working, maybe separately in our eyes, but certainly there is a kind of conspiracy here. Because they all agree to the ultimate objective, which is to empty the city of, quote, undesirable people, attract a new type of people, and that had to involve displacing the people who were there. And then you had other incentives, and I'm using the word sarcastically, yeah, such as massive job losses. You had underemployment. You had a whole bunch of other issues that compounded, in at least in the minds of the homeowners and residents, look, I can't afford to stay here. I gotta get out. So they abandoned not only the properties themselves, but they abandoned the land, which is, to me, the big issue, the land. Is there, in your view, if these things are being replicated in other cities, you mentioned that, I'm talking about it in terms of New York, and we'll talk about other cities as well where this is going on, and specifically, there's no doubt about it, that it is racially originating. The targeting of these properties, the targeting of these areas is absolutely based on race. What do you think it would take to get movement, not just by the people? The people have a desire to participate, but there's only so far that they can go. I'm talking about the leadership, and not just black leadership, but leadership across the board, the insistence on not seeing the problem and not tackling it in any way, because, of course, many of the people involved in this conspiracy are people who have a desire to own a lot of property and own a lot of land. Real estate is one of the biggest industries, if you will, in the United States. They're not ready to abandon that. So what do you see on the horizon?
Yes, I think it has to be from the bottom up. If the people themselves take action on a mass level, it will force a lot of the people who don't want to do the right thing to change their ways. It reminds me of the movement that has been going on now in France over the last month, the Gilets Jaunes, the Yellow Vest movement that's taking place, and it's really disrupted Paris. It's disrupted other areas in France and the Emmanuel Macron government, which promotes a neoliberal approach to domestic policy in France, was forced to eliminate the fuel tax. They were forced to raise the minimum wage for workers and other reforms. Now, whether this stays or not is another question, but I think it has to come from the bottom up. I really do.
Well, let's talk about what you see as some kind of ray of hope happening now.
Well, we're still meeting every week. The Moratorium Now Coalition, people are still showing up. They have concerns about what's going on. During the summer, we were able to save over 500 homes as a result of a settlement involving a class action lawsuit that had been carried out by the Michigan American Civil Liberties Union, the ACLU. The settlement was nowhere near what was needed and what we wanted, but we were able to wrestle from this limited settlement some results. First, by putting pressure on the city administration to extend the deadline. That was a major accomplishment, and they were able to do that for about 2.5 months. Mainly the youth that worked with us set up canvassing teams. They went out in the neighborhoods, identified people who were losing their homes as a result of property taxes, and they were able to pressure every resource, potential resource in the area, and over 500 people were able to benefit from this. Now, is this going to solve the problem? Absolutely not. That's a fraction The 1,500 homes that were slated for auction during September and October, I don't know how many of those homes sold. They have not been bragging and boasting as they have been in previous years about how much money the Wayne County Treasurer is making through the auctioning of property taxed foreclosed homes. But that was one example of what can take place in a city. But the problem is so enormous, it is so systematically driven that it is a major ailment, in my opinion. For example, the old train station in Detroit, which is on Michigan Avenue, it's just around Corktown, the other area I mentioned earlier, is being targeted for, quote, development, unquote. That old train station had been vacant for probably 25 years, if not more. And now Ford Motor Company is being offered, I believe, $250 million or $300 million in tax credits to redevelop that site. Was no vote on that, no real public debate on it. They were given those resources, and now they're going to set that up as some type of electric car research and development center. Now, at the same time, General Motors, which is headquartered maybe a mile away from the old train station, announced just a few weeks ago that they're going to close the last two remaining production facilities in the Detroit area, the Poletown plant, which is located on the border with Hamtramck in Detroit, and the Warren plant, which is located just on the other side of the Detroit border on the east side. This is going to dislocate thousands of workers, and we've been working to try to develop some type of fight-back program against those plant closings. General Motors, too, has been given huge tax abatements, subsidies, tax breaks. They were bailed out by the people through the federal government a decade ago. And within those agreements, which we're trying to get right now through the Freedom of Information Act, there are clauses which say that they have to keep plants open, that they have to notify people if there's going to be changes in production, as well as other corporate issues. And we feel very strongly this has been violated. So there's been meetings taking place in the Detroit area over the last week or so to discuss strategies on how to deal with this major devastating news that came just 2 weeks ago. Five plants are going to be closed in North America, one in Canada, the other one in Lordstown, Ohio, and two here in the Detroit area. It's going to be devastating. It could be up to 15,000 people who will lose their jobs directly through General Motors, and of course, other people will lose their jobs as well in industries that are related to General Motors automotive production, as well as small businesses that service their workers, and so forth. So here we have Ford Motor Company, which did not go bankrupt, but they are benefiting from tax subsidies supplied by the city of Detroit. General Motors, which has been given huge tax abatements and tax subsidies by the state of Michigan, as well as the local government, are closing down there are two production facilities, and they're headquartered right in downtown Detroit. This is what makes it even more outrageous for them. And even though Mary Barr, who's the CEO for General Motors, was called before the U.S. Congress, I believe 2 weeks ago, still, it doesn't appear that we have the type of urgency that is necessary to deal with such a situation as this, where you have people who get bailed out by the federal government, who are given huge tax subsidies, both by local municipalities as well as the federal government. Yet, if it looks like they're not going to make a profit, they're very quick to shut down plants, to lay off workers, and just to devastate these cities through their abandonment. So the struggle continues. it is ongoing. And I think there are various variables involved in this. You have the decline in car purchases, particularly smaller vehicles. Producing people I know who work in auto say it's more profitable for them to produce larger vehicles. And also the tariffs, which have been imposed by the Trump administration, is also on an international level driving down the purchase of U.S. Produced vehicles, as well as vehicles that are being imported into the United States that are produced in other countries. So it's a combination of factors, both the instability of the capitalist system itself and also misguided economic policies, which Trump claimed the imposition of tariffs would increase industrial production inside the United States. What we're seeing is that General Motors is closing four plants in the United States and one in Canada. So these are the challenges we're facing in this period.
I'm telling you, it's unbelievable. Yeah. I want to get to the heart of the matter here too, which concerns race and racism.
Yes.
Here is an opportunity for what one would assume would be a coalition effort to fight this. In your view, is there a coalition effort, or is it a case in which people, white people, are seeing that they could profit by this? I'm talking about working class type people, that mm-hmm. they have opportunities now in Detroit that they didn't have before. This idea that the state is reimagining the city. Nobody's translating what that means, but we all know what it means. Have white people who not too long ago would have been part of this struggle, are they participating?
Yes. In fact, they're going to be losing their jobs as well at General Motors. It's not just the African-American workers, workers from the Middle East, workers from Latin America. Yes, all of them are going to be impacted in this. And this does provide an opportunity for people to come together to fight against these plant closings, even to take over the plants and run them in a different fashion, which will be more advantageous to the workers. We've seen this movement in countries like Argentina, in South America, and we have not seen it to any large degree here in the United States, because the view of even many workers is that this is private property and the people who own it can do whatever they want. But our position is that a job is a property right of the workers. It's not exclusively the prerogative of the bosses to determine whether or not you should have a job based upon their own economic interests. This is why during the 1930s there were so many plant seizures and sit-down strikes, not just at General Motors in Flint, which won recognition for the UAW, but numerous production facilities or retail outlets here in the city of Detroit. There were sit-down strikes and worksite seizures, and people need to study that history. It happened also in the 1960s and 1970s in Detroit. The Dodge Main, you had the Dodge Revolutionary Union Movement, which sprang up. They engaged in what was called wildcat strikes because the UAW at that time was dominated by pro-business labor captains. As a direct result of the McCarthy era, where most of the leftists, many of whom were black, were purged from union leadership after World War II. Yes, these people are being impacted as well. The question is, in which direction will they go? Will they follow what Donald Trump propagandized about in 2016, where he tried to make it look like people from Mexico and people from Central America are the cause for all their problems, and that he's going to reopen the coal mines, he's going to reopen the steel mills, he's going to generate automotive production inside the United States. Well, we see how far that has gone. It's coming to a screeching halt here at the conclusion of 2018. The whites who are benefiting from all of this to a large degree are becoming smaller and smaller in number. The Dan Gilberts, the people who have high-ranking positions within his firm, the same is true of Illich Holdings and the other corporations. They're profiting. The banks have profited through bailouts from the federal government and through their usurious practices directed towards the working class people and oppressed people. However, more and more people as a whole are being forced into poverty, deprivation, desperation. We see a rise in homelessness, even in a state like California. It's criminal that it's not even publicized that you have just so many people who are living in camps, who have home to go to because of the high real estate costs. Then we have all these forest fires that are taking place, which are environmentally linked. Nothing's being done about it in terms of federal governmental policy. And in New York City, I go to New York on a regular basis. Homelessness, once again, is becoming a major problem in New York City. You see people sleeping in the streets, even in lower and mid-town Manhattan. These are the wealthier areas of New York, and you find people who are living in homeless shelters, sleeping on the street. So it's becoming a major, major issue in this country, but the government is not up to it, and it has to be the people who address these issues on a grassroots level. That is the only solution that I see.
What's as we round out the program, what do you recommend as a measure of self-protection against this this push to empty communities and to take over the housing, to not create affordable housing or low-income housing? What do you recommend people do?
People have to do something that they have not been doing to any great degree, and that is to organize within their communities. To break down these barriers, that's a very difficult thing to do. Most people are working two jobs, three jobs, long hours. They're exhausted. They don't have time to come to a meeting, to plan, to engage in demonstrations, to go to city council meetings, to even speak out against the atrocities that are being committed. But that's what has to happen. There has to be community organizing done. There has to be networks established around people who are working on housing. And that's difficult as well because some of these groups that are doing housing work are funded by the same people who are causing the problems, the nonprofit organizations. So it's only so much they can do, only so much they're willing to do because they have their own career interests to look after. And that's why Moratorium Now has rejected that type of nonprofit corporation model of organizing. We're a self-funded, self-directed, self-organized group, and we feel that we can be much more effective if we create our own resources for our own survival rather than depending upon private foundations and others to fund us. Even Dan Gilbert funds a lot of nonprofit organizations in Detroit, so you can see the limitations when you have someone who's highly responsible for the crisis to be funding purported solutions to the problems that they have created.
How can people get in touch with your organization, and how can they help?
Yeah, they can contact us. We are on the internet. It's moratorium-mi.org, moratorium-mi.org. We also have a Moratorium Now Coalition Facebook page that is very active. They can log on there as well. And yes, they can look me up on Facebook at Abayomi Azikiwe. We have other related Facebook and social media outlets. So yes, we're willing to work with anyone, anywhere around the country to share ideas around these issues. It's just not limited to Detroit. This is a nationwide problem of bad decisions that are being made, people who are being super exploited in terms of tax policy. So we have to come together to fight this.